with a $5 meal deal with new McValue. You pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Prices and participation may vary. McDouble meal, $6 in some markets for a limited time only.
Tottenham story is this. It's time to change the situation if Tottenham want to change.
I love to win, mate. That's the main thing. Hopefully I can fulfill those dreams and aspirations of every Tottenham supporter.
And still Ricky Villa. What a fantastic run. He scored.
He's going to have a crack. He is, you know. Oh,
he's there. Kane is the record.
Here's Lucas Moura.
Oh, they done it.
I'm loving big engines instead.
Guess I'm a Spurs fan now then.
Well, greetings, everybody. How are you feeling after the night that took Spurs back to a European final? I'm Marcus Buckland. Welcome to the Tottenham Way podcast. Dan Kilpatrick, intrepid traveller, has returned from the Arctic Circle. No sign of Tom Barkley or Tom Allnut, buried in sand, or maybe they drank a few expensive beers over there and we'll never be seen again. But Dan is back. I know it was a fantastic trip, Dan. I'd love to hear a bit more about the place itself. And I know you went hiking with Terry, our friend from a couple of weeks ago, who previewed the first leg, who's been a Bird of Glimp fan all his life, lives over there, but has also been a massive Spurs fan all his life. But before we talk about that and just how expensive a beer was, Spurs got through. And I have to say, I was never, ever feeling any stress at all throughout the 90 minutes, which I certainly wasn't anticipating. Was that your take of proceedings from inside the ground?
Yeah, like I felt very stressed before the game. I had an awful feeling going into it. And maybe Postecoglou is right about people viewing Spurs through a glass half empty kind of lens, because I was just thinking, oh God, they're going to screw this up. And I saw them kind of aggressively watering the plastic pitch before the game. I actually think they might have overwatered it. I thought it looked a bit slow and kind of waterlogged at periods last night. And it was got very drizzly very quickly. It was a lovely day. As you said, I went hiking with Terry in the afternoon. It was really clear and it was perfect temperature for walking. And we went up to this viewpoint, this peak, and it was all very pleasant. And then the kind of, you know, Arctic weather obviously changes pretty quickly and this kind of rain cloud descended and I thought, oh, the Spurs aren't going to like this. And I just didn't have a good feeling about it. But then, as you said, there weren't really any particularly hairy periods or moments during the game. And once the game got started, Spurs were, I thought, managing it very well. And let's face it, it was pretty boring. You know, they made it quite a boring game and that's exactly what they would have wanted. That suited them down to the ground. And I thought, you know, it was all the things that we kind of talked about the Frankfurt game being, you know, kind of committed, organised, resilient, but kind of more. It was more controlled than that. I thought at the end of the Frankfurt game was a bit hairy, a couple of kind of punts up in the air, but there weren't any points really that Spurs looked like they were panicking or they were nervy or they were just kind of playing for touch. You know, they always looked like they kind of knew what they were doing, and that really that was stop. Glimpse getting into their rhythm, you know, stop them, you know, finding their stride and kind of, using the home advantage to their advantage. And you know, they did those things very well. And I suppose you're in the European final. I mean, it almost hasn't really sunk in yet. I've literally just got back to my house after two flights from Oslo. Been kind of had my head in my computer and my phone all day doing work and looking at Bilbao travel options. So yeah, it's good to kind of say that and think about it really.
Yes. And the one downside now is, I mean, it's a great downside to have. Trying to get to Bilbao and back without bankrupting yourself is quite a challenge. We'll maybe come on to some of the suggestions we can offer those of you who may still be considering a trip there a little later. And I want to talk about a couple.
I'm absolutely not sharing any tips with someone because
that's horrible.
I had a great
come on,
tip.
We're a big family here, Dan.
Well, look, I had a great tip from Tom Allnut the day before the game. He said, why don't you look at Vitoria? It's an airport not many people know about. It's just south of Bilbao. So I found some great flights in and out of Vitoria. There was a change, but they were like 380 quid. I was waiting for sign off from the standard. And I kind of told a few of the lads and I think word spread. And, you know, seemingly within about an hour and a half, these flights from Vitoria that I thought were an absolute winner were gone before I got signed off from the standard. So I'm not sharing any more tips. Right. If I find any, I think all the kind of there's no kind of good options left now. So
I'm going to give a big shout out to Stuart Fraser, the tennis correspondent for the Times and the Sunday Times. He's a Rangers fan, a deluded Rangers fan. I'm not sure if I've already mentioned this in one of the previous pods, but prior to the quarterfinals, with Rangers still in the competition, he booked a flight from London to Biarritz. And that's a good option, by the way, if you are thinking of going to Bilbao. It's only a couple of hours away on bus from there. And he got a flight for £60. I mean, you're talking minimum of 600, I reckon, for that sort of thing. Now, if you can get one at all. So thanks to Stuart, I've got out there quite cheaply. Getting back is more of a challenge. But good luck if you're going. What a night. Hopefully it will be. I pray we don't concede a penalty after 36 seconds, as of course was the case in Madrid in 2019. Before we talk about some of the individual performances, some standout performances, particularly from those at the back and in the centre of midfield, I just want to ask you why it has taken this long for Spurs to produce such mature, grown-up displays. As you said, I mean, it's a...
None of these what-ifs are...
No, but Dan, listen, and fair play to Ange and the team. They've got it right when it's mattered in Europe. But you can't help but think if they played a little bit more like this throughout the course of the Premier League season, well, we certainly wouldn't be in 16th place.
Yeah, I mean, look, in all seriousness, I did mention in my article today, I said, it's impossible not to think, why wasn't this kind of show of pragmatism from Postecoglou and this kind of adaptability on show a bit earlier and in the Premier League? He's kind of explained that. I'm not hugely convinced by it. He sort of talks about cup competitions being different and, you know, there being sort of no room for error and therefore requiring a different approach. You know, almost as if to say, you know, you can lose league games and there's more of them. Which does seem to have been Spurs' approach for most of the season, to be fair. Just keep losing and then go on to the next one. But yeah, I mean, look, I almost feel like... Well, the first thing I think to say is that it is kind of remarkable when you think about the narrative around Postecoglou for so long, for so much of his Spurs tenure. It was all about him only playing one way, regardless of the state of the game, the opposition, the circumstances, all the rest of it. And he was asked so many times in press conferences that I started pulling my hair out, to be honest. Are you going to, you know, tweak your system for this game? You've got Man City or you've got a cup game or whatever. And he would always kind of, what do you think, mate? You know, kind of scoff at it and then laugh it off. And he seemed like someone who would much rather have, you know, failed his way than succeeded while compromising. But we are now in a... position where if you showed someone, you know, last night's game and they didn't know which team was which, but they kind of knew what Postecoglou's approach were, they would have said Glimt were, you know, put the Postecoglou team because they were the side playing out from the back. You know, they were the side, you know, trying to play through the press, trying to play through the lines and doing the things we normally associate with Postecoglou teams. And it was Spurs who were running down the clock from the first minute. Spurs were taking the time. Spurs were kind of and, you know, yeah, as I said, trying to disrupt the opposition and game down, which is, you know, absolutely not what we associate with successful Postecoglou teams. I mean, his mantra at Celtic called "We Never Stop." But last night, there were lots of stoppages. You know, Spurs were stopping it all the time whenever they could. Uh-huh. It is a really dramatically different approach. And I'm not that sounded like a criticism. It's not. You know, obviously, it's worked, it's really effective and it's impressive in its own way. But I think it's important to acknowledge that, you know, this is not what we expected from Ange even a few months ago. You know, this was not where he was. So I do wonder whether, you know, all the talk about his future and obviously the vibes that he's been picking up, you know, he's been reading all the stuff about his future. That's obvious. He's told us in press conferences he's reading the speculation about his future. I wonder whether he's just got to a point where he thinks, you know, I can't worry about philosophy because I there won't be a legacy unless I win this competition. I won't have another chance. And he's kind of put winning before his ideals now. And he has changed things and it is working.
I have to apologise. Somebody is working next door to where I am recording this podcast. If you can hear some drilling, which is actually cutting you out, Dan, I'm afraid there's nothing I can do about that. But yeah, listen, better late than never. Spurs have looked so assured in the last sort of couple of away trips, in particular to Frankfurt and then to the Arctic Circle last night. And I don't think it's any coincidence, Dan, that one player in particular, since they've sort of adopted this much more strategic, cautious approach, who has transformed himself in the space of a week, having come into the team perhaps a little fortuitously because of injuries, is Yves Bissouma. And we've wondered why for a few weeks at the start of last season was he brilliant. And ever since then, he's flattered to deceive. He appeared to be on his way out of the club just a couple of weeks ago. But I thought he was really good in the first leg, outstanding last night, helping to shield the defence alongside Benton Kerr. And you've got to feel it's to a large degree because of the way Spurs are playing. And I did feel that earlier in the season, for example, Romero, the centre-backs were getting isolated because of the way Spurs were playing. Good players were being made to look like bad players because of the system as much as anything else.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point because you can make a case, I think, that playing that number six role when Spurs are trying to do full Ange ball is just a thankless task. You know, it's such a hard job to do because you've got to be the kind of single pivot in there. You've got to resist pressure. You've got to pick up the ball from the centre backs, play through the opposition press. You know, you're kind of set up to not fail per se, but make mistakes and you know have a bit of a torrid time and be outnumbered at times. So yeah, perhaps it's not a surprise that Bissouma's look better. You know, in this kind of two with Bentancur and a bit more of a kind of solid, pragmatic setup. In fact, I think he always has looked better when he's been alongside Bentancur. So, yeah, I think that's a really interesting point. And yeah, the same is true of the centre-backs, who I thought were outstanding last night. I think we have to acknowledge the fact that, you know, the quality of the opposition was what it was. You know, the sort of funny thing about the game, and again, it, you know, we were guilty of it. I was really guilty of it, and I hold my hands up completely, is that, you know, Terry was guilty of it when he came on this pod. Is that, you know, I think we almost looked at Glimt and their kind of returning players from suspension and the artificial pitch and the conditions and just, you know, sort of got hysterical about Spurs screwing it up, forgetting that, you know, Tottenham have better players to a man, and World Cup, you know, a World Cup winner, and internationals in almost every position, if not every position. And Glimt are, you know, a fantastic story and a, you know, obviously a brilliantly coached team and well run club, but they are nonetheless playing in a minor European league. And, you know, if you drew them at pretty much any other stage in Europe in the, you know, in the initial phase or whatever, you'd be happy about drawing them. Frankly, you know, you'd say good result.
Yes.
I don't mind that tie. So that maybe got lost. Spurs' kind of natural superiority over them got lost. And so I do think when we're talking about brilliant individual displays, I still, you know, I want to see Bissouma run the game against Man U before I come on here and say, oh, he's turned a corner, he's brilliant.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. But there have been plenty of examples in the recent past of Spurs coming up against teams who do not have players as good as their own and getting beaten in both domestic and European competitions. So we can't take anything for granted. Bearing that in mind, though, you know, it's a time to be triumphant, really, at least until the final gets underway. But just how significant is this result? Because if you're an Arsenal fan or a Chelsea fan, I've got a good mate today who sarcastically comes on and says, yes, congratulations on beating Bissouma to get to the final of a European competition. Is there a danger that we're all going to get carried away now because of a couple of brilliant results, albeit against relatively mediocre opposition? Or should we really embrace what Spurs have done? After all, you can only beat whoever's put in front of you.
Yeah, I mean, if you can't get carried away when your club's in a European final, then you never can, really. So, I remember the build-up to Madrid 6 years ago. It was like a month between the semi-final and the final, which actually proved too long, didn't it? Like both teams went kind of flat and it felt very pre-season-y in the sort of heat of Madrid. You know, but now we've got about 10 days, haven't we, until or 2 weeks until the final. And I just think, you know, yeah, everyone should enjoy it. It looked like Postecoglou in that speech in the dressing room that Spurs put out on social media was kind of relishing the, you know, the task ahead of preparing for the final. I remember Pochettino saying that the build up to Madrid was like his happiest time at Spurs, that month where you know you've got this huge occasion ahead. So, you know, I think everyone should really kind of look forward to it and enjoy it. And that's it really. I mean, the league games, just if they felt irrelevant yesterday, you know, they couldn't feel, you know, more irrelevant now. I mean, it's just like avoid injuries, have a party, and, you know, get a few players, you know, Son being the obvious one, kind of some minutes if you can. And that's all they're about now. We've seen again that Spurs, you know, can do it slightly differently in Europe. So let's go all in for 17th and Europa League.
Well, I'm happy to party whenever possible here. Ange's speech was quite revealing. He was pumped. It, obviously, when you just won a semi-final, it's going to have that wonderful sense of occasion. And as he said, enjoy last night. And then every moment of every day is focused on that final a week on Wednesday, of course. Yeah, just 12 days away. What about Ange's position now? I've seen quite a few people, even diehard critics of the man, say, "Oh, I've been swayed."
Well, you're a diehard critic, so where are you?
I'll tell you where I am, actually, Dan. I'd like to give Ange Postecoglou the full-time role as Tottenham PR officer, because I think he's absolutely brilliant when it comes to pumping out the Spurs message, having a go at those, the likes of Arsene Wenger, anybody else who wants to change the rules and say, why should a team winning the Europa League go into the Champions League? Because it's been in the rule book for a number of years. Ange has been absolutely brilliant. And I know you guys love going down every week to the press conferences. He'll always give you something. He's got a bit of charisma, a lot of charisma, there's no doubt. But I will say to you here and now, Dan, it's very easy to get carried away. I've made the analogy with Manchester United from last season. They won the FA Cup final. They played brilliantly to beat Manchester City. And based on those 90 minutes, they decided to keep Erik ten Hag as manager. And within a few months of the start of the new season, he was gone. And I think, as wonderfully exciting as all this is, personally, and I may sound like an absolute killjoy, I still don't think that Ange is the man in the long term. Do you agree with that, or have you been swayed back under his guidance?
That's fair enough, Marcus. I think that's totally fair. I'm going to do the kind of boring Laura Koonsberg on one hand this, on the other hand that answer, I think. Before the game last night, I would have said for sure, I think, you know, either way, my feeling is that he's going to go at the end of the season. And it's kind of a case of almost like semantics, you know, is he fired having lost the semi-final or final, or is it kind of a mutual thing? You know, he walks away having fulfilled his promise to win a trophy in the second season with a kind of thank you and pat on the back from the club. I'm suddenly feeling, you know, not so sure, because it would just be so momentous, you know, in Ange's words, it would be massive to win this competition, I think. And, you know, there would be an open top bus parade, you know, down the A10 or whatever, you know, down the Tottenham High Road. And the vibes would be so good. And you know, so much about Postecoglou's tenure has just kind of been based on vibes, I think. And It would from there, it would just feel, you know, if he wanted to stay, and, you know, he was kind of saying that publicly from a position of strength, it would, you know, it would feel quite jarring, and it would be a big thing for the club to say, actually, we're going to get rid of, you know, the manager who delivered a first European trophy in 41 years and a first trophy in 17 years. So it's really hard to call. You know, I probably... My feeling is that if he did kind of walk away on his terms, you know, as a kind of mutual thing with a big bonus for winning the Europa League and a kind of payoff, you know, forever kind of immortalised as one of Spurs, I mean, let's face it, one of Spurs' best managers of the modern era, as he would be if he wins this competition, then I think that, you know, that would be probably the best thing for everyone. Obviously, it depends who succeeds him. But I could see that being a kind of win for all parties, you know, and would then be a very attractive proposition to maybe go out and get another top job somewhere in Europe. And Spurs could perhaps move on to a manager who's just kind of better suited to, you know, managing four competitions and you know, keeping them punching in the Premier League. So, yeah, I think that'd be the best case, but I just don't know now. I feel less certain that it'd be his last season after last night.
I mean, you know, so much, of course, is going to come down to what happens in the final, and we'll come on to that in a moment. But I agree with you. I think it would be in the best interests of Ange to walk away as a winner. I mean, Keith Birkinshaw walked away as a winner at Tottenham in 1984 in this very same competition. He went for different reasons, of course. There was all sorts of infighting behind the scenes. He'd lost faith in the club, but it happened. If you go onto the continent, you know, okay, the likes of Real Madrid and Barcelona expect more in the way of success, a heck of a lot more. But it's very usual for a manager who's just won the league to be sacked because you haven't won the Champions League that season. It's different levels, but it's a similar thing. And I do feel also that just because Spurs haven't won anything for 17 years, we shouldn't necessarily reward a manager because they have finally won something. And again, I don't want to dampen the parade at all, but let's remember this was the first season that Champions League clubs didn't drop down into the Europa League. So you can argue it's been a much easier competition to win from that point of view. But it will essentially come down to the final. And here we are, a sixth all-English major European final, the third one involving Tottenham. They beat Wolves in, I believe it was the inaugural season of this competition in the early 70s. They lost to Liverpool, of course, in 2019, a final that was great for 36 seconds. So they're into a third out of the six. They've beaten Manchester United three times this season, Dan. United, still dismal domestically, but starting to look half decent, certainly based on last night against Athletic Club. And who was it? One of the pundits last night did make the point that when it comes to winning trophies, Manchester United know how to get it done and Spurs don't. I think it was Paul Scholes, actually, so I guess we could discount him partly because he's a United, ex-United player. But I think there is a point to that. And United tend to play well in big games like the Cup final last season. So what's going to happen?
Yeah, I mean, I don't just think that's a point. I think that is the point, really, going into this final, that United have that sort of big club pedigree and habit of winning stuff, even when they've been, you know, in this post-Fergie doldrums for, you know, however long it is now. You know, they still found a way to sort of keep their trophy cabinet sort of ticking over. And Spurs aren't a club, you know, certainly not in the Levy era that have ever done that. You know, they you know, I think it, to be fair to Levy, it does actually predate him, but, you know, they're not a club that has that kind of muscle memory for winning stuff and delivering and sort of turning up in finals. So that does feel like, you know, a huge theme going into this final. And the fact that Spurs have beaten United three times this season almost kind of just only adds to that for me. You know, it makes it feel more likely that United then just show up in you know, when it really matters and the Spurs don't. So yeah, I think that, you know, we're going to hear a lot of chat about that, you know, in the next 10-12 days. You know, it's a big thing, but, you know, equally so too is Postecoglou's record, and I think he hasn't lost to United in five meetings, and yeah, he's beaten them all three times this season. You know, they're such a fallible team that, you know, they should be, yeah, they should be there for the taking, really, if Spurs, can do it.
Should be.
Sorry, I just totally lost focus there because I got a message from my boss saying, book your Bilbao flights now.
No.
So I was panicking.
Good.
You talk for a minute, Marcus.
Well, I'll tell you that while we've been talking, I've had an email from a very reliable source to get me a ticket for the final to say that it's very unlikely they'll be able to do that. So, anybody got a spare ticket by any chance, please do get in touch. We'll give you a name check. that'll be it. But
I'm now booking my Bilbao flat in real time.
Well, you do that and ask your boss, you need an extra ticket so I can come along and hold your typewriter or whatever.
I've always wanted you to be my bag man.
There was two other things I want to ask you about, if you can still focus while you're booking your ticket. The trip itself, you went hiking. I know that on the Wednesday night, a few of you went out, had a little bit of the local hospitality. What sort of a place is Berda? I mean, could you imagine living there? I was watching last night as the players came in and the weather, that rain cloud had descended. And I was thinking, wow, mid-May, and it's as miserable as that. This is not a place you want to hang around in for too long. But I get the impression that there was a fair bit of the allure that captured your imagination.
Yeah, I mean, it was a really interesting place. I mean, obviously, being in the Arctic Circle, you did feel kind of like you were at the end of the earth a little bit. And yeah, as I said, I went on a hike with Terry, and we kind of trekked up to a viewpoint above the town. And yeah, it was spectacular. You know, we didn't have clear visibility, but you can kind of look around, and there's various islands and kind of snow-capped peaks around you. Yeah, a proper away trip. I mean, I spoke to quite a few fans out there, and to a man, you know, they were saying kind of how interesting it was and how friendly the locals were. So a really good experience, and not one that obviously you're going to get kind of regularly, I think. I've got a fisherman's hat I bought, Marcus. I'll just put it on so you can see it.
I saw that online. It's
Oh yeah, Alistair Gold put it up.
It suits your attire, and I don't mean that as a compliment. I was imagining you were all eating elk and I don't know, drinking shots of something that the locals enjoy on Tuesday night. Is that about right?
No, it was. Sorry, that was quite boring from that perspective. It was just kind of pizza and sort of the usual things.
How much was a beer?
Roughly a tenner.
Okay. Well, it looked great. I mean, it had that image, sort of an FA Cup tie almost, you know, or certainly playing a lower league side, but the noise was great. I know that, you know, in that part of the world, Tottenham are actually very popular. So it was wonderful to enjoy the atmosphere and to see that absolute joy, the raw emotion on the faces of the Spurs players and indeed those very brave 400 Spurs fans who made the trip. And I hope they've all got home safely by now. It's far too soon to start getting predictions on the final. The one thing I will say, having looked at this a little bit earlier, is, I cannot believe it's 41 years since we last won this competition. Dan, you were not around in those days. At least you weren't making sense, to be honest.
I was very much not around.
You're still not making any sense. But I remember going very clearly with my mate, Will, and in those days, you could just go to White Hart Lane on the night of the match, get in the queue, get into the ground. And of course, it was a thriller. Went to a penalty shootout. Spurs came through. The only time that Spurs and Manchester United have met in a final was in the League Cup in 2009 at Wembley. Finished 0-0. Spurs, much the better team. I seem to remember Luka Modric being outstanding that day. And then Spurs were appalling in the penalty shootout and they lost it. I actually took my wife to that game. It's her only ever cup final. So I've just got a sneaking feeling that whatever happens, unfortunately, in Bilbao, Dan, it's going to go to penalties. We shall see. One last question for you before. I know you've got to book this ticket.
I'm actually just going to hit the booking now, so okay. I should be,
so we can have your attention again. I feel like I'm paddling around here talking to myself.
Sorry, I'm really sorry. This has to be done.
It makes for great podcasting here as Dan Kilpatrick of The Standard books his flight to Bilbao. Read all about it. And he's not looking very happy. He's biting his nails. There's that pause as he seeks confirmation.
Okay.
You got it?
Yeah,
right.
I think so.
Now get on and find me a ticket, please. This is the last question for you today. Harry Kane at the weekend, of course, won the Bundesliga title. And personally, I'm absolutely thrilled. And any decent-minded Spurs fan will be delighted that Kane got some silverware. If he had been given a choice, this started this season, last season, Harry, you can win the Bundesliga with Bayern Munich, or you can win the Europa League with Tottenham Hotspur. What does he choose?
Well, I think it. I think it's more meaningful. It would have been more meaningful to win the Europa League with Spurs than the Bundesliga with Bayern. I think, you know, that is kind of hard to disagree with, surely, given the frequency with which Bayern win that competition. But, you know, I don't think Kane's going to have any regrets. You know, I don't think Kane would want to be scrapping around in 16th on the table, given, you know, the standards he's set and, you know, the levels he aspires to. So, yeah, I mean, it is, I guess, there is something quite kind of poetic in that, you know, Kane finally gets his hands on this trophy that he's been waiting for, and Spurs might finally win one in the same season. But, I think, why don't we kind of celebrate Solanke, who I thought was outstanding again last night.
First Spurs player, I think, by the way, since Bobby Smith to score in both legs at the same European tie for Spurs.
Oh, really? Yeah, I mean, I think he's great. Like, his hold-up play is just brilliant, and the way he kind of works and presses and brings other people into the game, I think he's such an asset. Like, I was walking with Tom Allnutt back from the stadium to our hotel, actually, after the game, and I was saying, it's the only thing that is kind of missing is, you know, you never feel like he's going to get the ball on the edge of the box and kind of open up his body and curl one into a corner, do you, like Kane used to? He only really scores the sort of scrappy goals, but, you know, that's who he is. And I think comparing people to Kane is always unfair. But he's a real asset, and kind of, I guess as a final word, just wrapping him, Romero and Van de Ven in cotton wool for the final feels like, they feel like the three to me that just cannot get injured in the next 12 days.
And I don't advocate anybody getting injured, any footballer. But if Bruno Fernandes could just pick up a little bit of a knock that was to rule him out. And actually, you know who scares me is Mason Mount, who suddenly bounces back to form with two terrific goals last night. I mean, Mason's had a lot of injury problems, but nothing serious, guys. Just be unavailable in a week and a half. Danny Boy, thank you very much indeed. Of course, if Spurs do win, they're back in the Champions League, and maybe we could persuade Harry to come back now that he's done what he had to do. I mean, you've got your Bundesliga. Bayern aren't going to win the Champions League. Come back to Spurs. Oh, what a game we have. Everything does stand on it. Dan's got his ticket. Thank you very much indeed. Hopefully the two Toms will get back safely. And every time I say we'll speak to them, they disappear again. But we've got Crystal Palace at home on Sunday, 2:15 kickoff. Then, of course, Aston Villa, the rearranged game next Friday. And then the final. And then Brighton, last game of the season. Who knows what sort of atmosphere there will be for that one. But thanks to Dan of the Evening Standard. I am Marcus Buckland. Spurs are in a European final. Enjoy it. Come on, you Spurs.
Ryan Seacrest here. When you have a busy schedule, it's important to maximize your downtime. One of the best ways to do that is by going to ChumbaCasino.com. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino games like spin slots, bingo, and solitaire that you can play for free for a chance to redeem some serious prizes. So hop on to ChumbaCasino.com now and live the Chumba life. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.